me the question again?
Sorry, how are you advocating for change and progress in the black community? What are some things you would encourage others to do to see change around them?
Yeah, a couple of things. Me personally, over the last couple of decades, one of the things people have gotten tired of hearing me talk about is abortion and black genocide. The number one killer of black people by far since 1973 has been abortion. It has killed more black people than all of the other causes of death combined. I don't stop talking about that. I haven't stopped talking about it for two decades. In fact, you know, my wife and I got so involved in this issue and so involved in the pro-life movement and so involved in the fact, you know, black women make up 12% of the population, but 36% of the abortions. Margaret Sanger's Negro Project, you know, Malthusian eugenics and a desire to eliminate the unwanted races, you know, and especially black people. That being carried on even today, her recruiting of black churches and black pastors and black doctors in order to encourage black people to have abortions. And now that being common in our culture. And, you know, it became so real to us that we then realized that there was a need on the other side. And so the reality of adoption and trying to encourage black families to adopt. And then, you know, stepping up and getting real with it. You know, we're telling other people about this. And so we've adopted 7 black children because of our personal commitment to this particular issue. That's why when I think about this and what's going on, anybody who knows me knows that the issue of fatherlessness in the black community and fatherlessness as it's growing in this country, you know, 3 of my last 4 books, you know, talking about family discipleship, you cut those books and they bleed my experience with and passion about turning the corner on this issue of fatherlessness. So adoption, fatherhood, encouraging fatherhood, you know, these are things for us that are real. And these are ways that we're committed in this area and in this process. And, of course, this issue, this black genocide of abortion, I will not stop talking about this issue. You know, we can talk about perceived racism all day long. You know, we can talk about the things that we feel are unjust all day long. But Roe versus Wade is a law. It's got a name. It's got a face. I know where it is. I can go right to it. My perception about what people feel about me, my perception about inequality, that doesn't have a face. What is that? How do you deal with a perception? I'm talking about something that's real, something that's a fact. And so for me, that's something that I'm passionate about. That's something that I ache over. And it's something that we're doing to ourselves. And so for me, those are things that I'm passionate about, that I'm involved in, that I'm engaged in, have been for decades. Want to do more, praying that God, you know, by his grace will allow us to help people see the connection between adoption and the gospel, you know, that in the order salutis, it's not just justification and sanctification and glorification, but there's justification and there's adoption. It's adoption. That's the gospel. And black families don't adopt. And so there are black children who are sitting there waiting for families to adopt them. And then black people have the audacity to get mad at white people for adopting the black children that they won't. And so that's an area where I've got both boots on the ground.
Okay.
Daniel Patrick Moynihan, in his famous 1965 report entitled "The Negro Family, The Case for National Action," close quote. Longish quotation, but it gets to something, I believe. Moynihan, the fundamental problem is that of family structure. The Negro family in the urban ghettos is crumbling. A middle class has managed to save itself, but for vast numbers of the unskilled and poorly educated, the fabric of conventional social relationships has all but disintegrated. So long as this situation persists, the cycle of poverty and disadvantage will continue to repeat itself. Close quote. When Moynihan wrote those words, the illegitimacy rate among African Americans was 25%. Mm. Today, the illegitimacy rate among white Americans is 36%. Mm. Among Hispanics, more than 50%. And among African Americans, more than 70%.
Yes.
Aside from throwing up your hands in despair, what is to be done?
I start off with two videos. Dr. Vodi Baucom speaking about fatherlessness and the Planned Parenthood genocide that is so amazing, given the fact that we recently had videos demonstrating what Planned Parenthood's all about, and yet we're now bringing charges against the people that made the videos and so on and so forth. And then the Wall Street Journal interviewing Thomas Sowell on the subject of the black family. This was a few years ago. And what did you hear there? You heard 70% illegitimacy rate. That was a few years ago. You heard fatherlessness. You heard Planned Parenthood. And evidently, if you're Thomas Sowell or Vodi Baucom, you can talk about these things. But if you're not, and you may have noticed that there's a similarity between Dr. Baucom and Dr. Sowell, they share something. And evidently that allows them to be passionate and to speak about it. We're doing this program today because last Friday, I was on my way home. I had noticed over the years that if you, well, some of you may recall, remember when a meteor hit in Russia a few years ago, exploded in midair, broke windows, all sorts of stuff. I noticed that all the videos of it came from dash cams. And then I noticed that if you want to see a compilation of crazy accidents or near misses, they almost always come from Russia. And I started reading and found out that just simply for insurance laws, pretty much everybody in Russia has a dash cam. And I thought, you know, that's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. So I got one of these little Garmin 20 dash cams. And I just reach up there and turn it on when I get in the car and turn it off when I get where I'm going. And, you know, I've seen a few things with it. But I was going home on Friday, and I pulled up to the corner of 35th Avenue and Glendale. And I happened to be, it was one of those situations where my lane was open. So I was the first car in the, not the left-hand turn lane. It's one left-hand turn lane, three lanes going north. And I guess there had been some left-hand turns. And as this traffic starts, I see a police vehicle. It was a police SUV going from my left to my right. And right as he goes by, I see a young man. I would estimate he was about 15 years of age. He was a black young man. And he was dressed in such a fashion that the rear of his shorts is down under his butt, so his derriere is out there, so you can see what underwear he's wearing. And I notice him, you know, the cops passed him. He didn't openly do it so that sort of like, you know, like this, but he flipped him off. He gave him the finger, the cop. And then he finished off a, you know, like a Gatorade, Powerade, some type of drink in a plastic bottle thing. I don't know what it was. As he got out of view, I eventually discovered, of my camera. And then he just tossed it. He didn't try to... He didn't hide it. He was performing. He's right there in front of everybody. He wants everybody to see what he's doing. And I happened to look over at the ladies. There were two ladies in the car in the... I was on the left, and they were in the center. So there would be one more lane over to the right. And they're doing the same thing I'm doing. Like, you got to be kidding me. And one of them actually saw me looking over, and they pulled up a little bit farther and started looking at me like... And I'm like, I know, amazing. And the light turns, and off we go. I started thinking about that young man. Now, what did not cross my mind at first at all was his race. I mean, I recognized it. But unlike the many lies, falsehoods, cavils that have been launched my direction over the past 4 or 5 days, race is not the first thing I think of. I do not filter my worldview through racial categories or anything like it. What I started thinking about was when I was 15 years old. And I started thinking about, well, what made me to differ? Why would it never cross my mind to perform in public these acts of dishonoring authority? Dishonoring other people. I think walking around with your butt in the air is dishonoring to you and to the people around you. You're not showing respect for people around you. You are forcing them to see something they don't want to see. Throwing trash. Oh, everybody does that. No, I didn't. Why not? I've been accused of being self-righteous for even observing this. I was not being self-righteous. I was recognizing that in all probability, and I said all probability, because this, what I wrote was not about this young man. It was about our culture. Most people missed that. But what I started thinking about was just how thankful I was for the restraints that I had in my family and even in my culture that were no longer there. When I think of the music that I listened to as a young person, I didn't get into this in the article, but I think of even the music that I listened to back then. It didn't encourage me to engage in that kind of behavior, but I bet the music that young man probably listens to does encourage him to do that exact thing. And I was just thinking about how much has changed. And obviously, as I've said many times on the program, I think a lot more about the future today because I have grandchildren. And I'm looking more at trends than I ever did before. And I just had to think about, do I see anything on the horizon that's going to change these trends? Well, when I got home, I think on the way home, all of a sudden, I made the connection. I said, wait a minute, I've got the dash cam. I'm not used to having this. I wonder if I could find that, grab that. I had never actually bothered, look for videos and stuff like that. So what I did when I got home, I found the video, and you could very clearly see the young man flipping the cop off and so on and so forth. I thought, I've commented about this in so many different ways, the cultural trends, things like that. I just put a little thing on Facebook, and it was a little thing. The article was 545 words. 545 words. A couple paragraphs. Just a few paragraphs. It was not a thesis. It was not meant to be anything more than, what's gonna change these trends? And I put the video up, put it up, moved on to other things. Didn't really give it much thought. On Saturday around noon, I realized that a volcano was erupting. And sadly, it was in the middle of, I was trying to have a conversation with a Muslim about some of the things he was saying. I'd like to be able to pick that conversation up. Hopefully we'll be able to do so after this. I had to drop it because people started coming out of the woodwork. It was unbelievable. The amount of vitriol and nastiness and reading into what I had said, stuff that has no basis in anything I've ever done. I've written 24 books. I've done 150 moderated debates. We have, I don't know how many thousands of dividing line programs out there. I mean, if you wanted to try to find some basis in my ministry or my life to say you're a racist, you've got plenty of stuff, but 545 words is all you can come up with? Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, here's what I wrote. I'm going to read the whole thing. 545 words. Here's what I wrote. Now, this is what I actually wrote. An edited version with vile insertions, written by a vile, noxious internet troll, has been quoted by a number of people. And we'll be talking about how social media has turned people into the greatest talebearers and gossips on the planet. Just willing to retweet, link to anything without even bothering to read it and go, what's that? I hadn't seen that. We've all done it. We've all done it. We have all engaged in the sin of gossip, slandering others just by not checking our sources. It's way too easy just to hit that little retweet thing. We've all done it. It's happened to me now many times over the course of the past couple of days. Here's what I wrote. I bought a dash cam recently. Seems everyone in Russia has one. And I thought it'd be pretty good to have to document some of the crazy things that happen while driving. I sort of figured people would probably go, so you moved to Russia? And that's not really what I meant. I didn't bother even editing it. I mean, that's how just... Anyways. So I was coming home this evening and happened to be the first car at Glendale and 35th Avenue in Phoenix. And as you will see, a young black kid, looks to be about 15 years or old or so, was crossing the street. Now, if you watch, you will see a police SUV cross in front of me first going east. The kid then comes in the screen, and though he sort of hit it under his elbow, he plainly flips off the police vehicle. Then he is emptying the drink he is consuming as he walks out of the frame. What you can see is that he then simply tossed the bottle into the bush in the corner of the gas station. I happened to notice the two ladies in the car next to me had seen the same thing. We just looked at each other, put up our hands in exasperation, and shook our heads. As I drove away, I thought about that boy. There is a more than 70% chance he has never met his father. In all probabilities, he has no guidance, has no example. He is filled with arrogance and disrespect for authority. He lives in a land where he is told lies every day. The lie that he cannot, through hard work and discipline, get ahead, get a good education, and succeed at life. He is lied to and told the rest of the world owes him. And the result is predictable. In his generation, that 70% number will only rise. He may well father a number of children, most of which will be murdered in the womb, padding the pockets of Planned Parenthood. And those that survive will themselves be raised without a natural family, without the God-ordained structure that is so important for teaching respect and true manhood or womanhood. It never crossed my mind to flip off a police car as it passed me by when I was his age. Of course, it never crossed my mind to walk around with my butt hanging out of my pants either, as if the entire world needed to see what kind of underwear I was sporting that day. I know I would have been mighty guilty had I tossed my drink bottle into a bush, and I never would have dreamed of doing that in front of everyone, like this young man did. But I had a father and a mother, and I was taught to respect others and myself. And if I had not had those things, I still would not have acted as he, simply because times have changed and not for the better. There was simply more restraint in my day. It surely makes me wonder what the future holds. Oh, I know, this is nothing. There are videos of online of kids like this shooting guns in the air, robbing people and doing carjackings. I know, but you need to understand, those folks didn't get there without first finding it fun to strut, flip, toss, and live an attitude of disrespect. 545 words. I think it's actually, yeah, it looks like it was exactly two paragraphs. Now, let me comment on what has gotten everybody angry. I said there's more than 70% chance he has never met his father. That number was probably exaggerated. I know, Wall Street Journal said 70%, and it's a little higher than that now. But saying never met his father, somebody goes, oh, you don't know that, just because he might be illegitimate, he might know who his father was. Funny thing is that yesterday I was listening to Vodi talk about his own situation. He knew who his father was. He saw him once in a while, but even Vodi said, since he was not in the home, since he was not active, he was absent. He was not, if you're not a part of that life on a regular basis, it's amazing how many articles I found online where people were saying, oh, if even once a week, well, wow, if once a week, how about every day? Which is what I was talking about. In other words, I even mentioned, what's this? God-ordained structure that is so important for teaching respect and true manhood or womanhood. That's not something you teach on visitation days only. One of the greatest examples that any father can give his son of being a man is how you treat that young man's mother every day. Every day. One of the best examples of womanhood to give to a daughter or to a son to know what kind of woman he should marry is the joy with which the mother engages in her motherly duties in the home every day. It's the little things. It's the everyday things. It's the God-ordained structure of the family. The greatest gift that you can give to your kids and to your grandkids is to have them at your 50th anniversary because of what that means you've done, because of what that means you've given them. That's what I was talking about. And so I don't know this kid. People are, you were judging him. I was using him as an example of what's going on in our society. And the fact that not on the one end, you've got the attack upon the very definition of family. But then on the other, you have such rampant fornication, such rampant sexuality. I'm not the one that made up the phrase baby daddy. I'm not the one who watches on television as so many women have children by multiple men. There was a day when that was considered shameful because our society still had a somewhat agreed upon set of moral principles. And when those moral principles have been abandoned, well, the family has fallen apart as well. But notice, I talked about probabilities. And people were posting HuffPo articles. Please don't post HuffPo articles for me. HuffPo articles and everything else about, well, maybe not, it's not that bad, or maybe. And I just sat back going, why are these people trying to defend this behavior? I had people actually say, oh, I've done that plenty of times. I've flipped off to cops plenty of times. And these are people who call themselves Christians, and I want to go, have you repented of that? When did you start repenting of that? This is someone going to make a biblical argument here? That what this young man was doing was good for him? And good for anyone else? Good for his family? Let's say, theoretically, that he has a mom and a dad at home that work hard, and he's just an Absalom. He's just in rampant rebellion. That's a possibility. I realize that. But is it not far more likely that he's acting out on the examples that have been given to him in the place of what God intended us to have in the family unit? So he's looking to these, I'm not going to name names, but big name artists who live and behave in these ways? Maybe? You think that's, you think, which is more likely? That he's acting out on that, or that he is an Absalom-type rebel against a really good, solid family structure? Which do you think is more probable? It's pretty obvious. I talked about the lies that he's told. And touching a little bit on political things here, but I'm just going to be straightforward. The people who have the seemingly the biggest impact in what would be probably his community, assuming once again certain things that, well, might be different. Those individuals are, they make their living out of convincing people they're all victims. And that they're never going to get ahead because of this, because of that, because of the other thing, because of something that happened 200 years ago. And let me tell you one of the reasons why you're not going to hear me apologize for having posted this. Let me tell you why. For me to apologize, those who are demanding this of me, would be for me to throw under the bus, to show direct disrespect to a legion of black men and women that I have come to know over the years, who live lives of godliness, husbands committed to their wives, wives committed to their husbands, committed to raising godly children, who have endured their own people telling them, you're not black enough, you're acting white. And they've put it aside. Why? Because they know that the gospel is colorblind. They know that there's nothing in the Bible that talks about different standards for races. And they've put up with it. And they live godly lives. And I honor them. And I will not dishonor them by apologizing for pointing out that that behavior that I observed is self-destructive, destructive to family, destructive to society, and eternally destructive because it's sinful. I will not do it. I will not bow the knee to the ethnic Gnostics that demand that we read the certain social studies and engage the narrative. Not interested. Not interested. I'm thinking of particular Christian men I know right now, particular Christian women, and I will not dishonor them by buying into a racist Christianity. Not going to do it. Now, I then, and it's funny, my critics have been almost silent about this. Silent about this. I then mentioned the warfare against the black child in the womb. How can you criticize me for what I wrote without even mentioning that? How can you be silent about that? Now look, I understand. I think a very large proportion, I don't know what percentage, I haven't even bothered. I mean, there's been 3 or 4 webcasts posted today, just today, that I'm not going to listen to them. Some are on my side, some are against me, whatever. I mean, it's the first time I even had a chance to talk about it since it happened. It's an amazing number of people that have just, you know, condemned me and put me away even before I even have a chance to talk about it. Such is life. But I recognize that the motivations behind some of these people, very, very, very different. Very different. Some people are just piling on. Some people are doing this because they really think it's important. Some people are doing it out of sheer ignorance. They just heard there's a controversy and let's you know, they just run to whatever the, you know, the current thing is. I understand their different motivations, but how can you be silent about that issue? I raised the issue of fatherlessness, the God-ordained family, and the plague of abortion, and the disrespectful attitude toward authority as well. It's all of a thing. Now, I'm not watching much of this, but one of the nastiest critics, a man who has called me names, condemned me out of ignorance, has asked a question on Twitter. I'm going to go ahead and answer it. Please explain, he lives in a land where he's told lies every day. What lies are black people told and who's telling them? The black leadership. The people that are telling you you're a victim. That you're held down by something that happened 200 years ago. That's who I'm talking about. The Jesse Jacksons of the world. They're the ones I'm talking about. And the crazed white liberals in the university. The yahoos that took over Mizzou a while back. It's all part and parcel of the same leftist wacko stuff that is just repeated over and over and over again until it becomes a mantra. And I get the feeling that young man has probably heard those lies over and over and over again. And unless he has a father and mother in his life that can correct those things, he's probably going to believe it. And it may be that his father and mother believe him too. Anyway, so I talked about the natural family, the God-ordained structure, the teaching of respect. We have to teach respect. It's not something that just happens. It's something that has to be illustrated and taught and even discipline brought to bear. I happen to believe in something called, total depravity. And total depravity knows no race. How much melanin you have in your skin? Irrelevant. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. Has to be taught. Has to be inculcated. I listen to the music of the younger generation. Doesn't matter what the race is here. But especially what you find in hip hop. And what do you find? The objectification of women. Rampant vulgarity and profanity. Discussion of rape. Treating women like mere animals. Total disrespect for any form of authority whatsoever. I mean, it is as ungodly can be. Are you condemning that, my dear critics? Are you consistent in saying this stuff is mind rot and soul rot? Then how come those people are some of the richest people on the planet? Good question. Then for the self-righteousness charge, again, it's one thing if you don't know who I am. If you've never watched me stand in front of an audience in a mosque in South Africa and tell those people that I have no right to stand before them in and of myself because I have no righteousness outside of Jesus Christ. If you don't know me, that's one thing. But those of you who do know me and know what I've said about that, how dare you? How dare you? I mean, I can understand 545 words. Man, if that's all you ever know about me, then you could ignore all the rest of my life. What I was doing was recognizing how God's grace had been manifested in my having a stable family and the restraint I wouldn't have talked about that if I hadn't recognized that I could have done the exact same things. I talked about the restraint upon me. And one of the signs, and I've been talking about this forever, one of the signs of God's judgment upon our culture is what? The lifting of the hand of restraint. The lifting of the hand of restraint. It doesn't just happen over here, one big thing, and over there, one big thing. It is a cultural thing. And that's what we're seeing happen. So, as I said at the end, you know, I had seen, was it Oakland? I had seen a video just recently with the people shooting the guns, and yeah. And I think they were Hispanic, if I recall correctly. That, I mean, again, that's not the first thing I think of. I'm having to think back to it and go, I think they may have been Hispanic. There may have been some blacks and some Hispanics. I don't remember, but they were shooting their guns. They were throwing stuff at cop cars. I mean, social order breaking down. And that's what I had in mind when I said, yeah, I know this is, most people say this is nothing. What I was observing as a grandfather was how different normative behavior in public is today than it was 40 years ago. Why would that be? Well, I think I've laid a foundation for explaining that. Now, for those of you who are ethnic Gnostics. Now, what's an ethnic Gnostic? Well, the ethnic Gnostic, the Gnostic in general, believed that salvation came by taking in secret knowledge through, you know, various ceremonies and so on and so forth. And so this you had to have an experience that would put you on a higher plane than just the hoi polloi down here, just the regular old people. So an ethnic Gnostic is a person who basically says that you cannot address the experience of an ethnic group without walking in their shoes. In other words, outsiders need not comment. You have to have a certain melanin count in your skin. Melanin is the what gives us the tone of our skin. It's actually a really, really cool God-designed sunscreen, is what it is. I'm not getting into intelligent design, but it's part of intelligent design. Anyway, which is why the pasty white-skinned people of Scandinavia or Northern Ireland don't have a lot of it, because they rarely see that ball in the sky. And the people who live at the equator have got a lot of it, because they see it every day, all day long. It's part of how God designed us. And it has absolutely, positively, nothing to do with the commandments of God. Nothing. Nothing. Show me somewhere in the Bible when Paul wrote to slaves and he said, slaves, be obedient to your masters. This glorifies God. There are no textual variants in any manuscripts that have a little asterisk. Down at the bottom was a little note that said, well, unless your particular ethnic group has experienced this kind of mistreatment, and then you don't have to do this. And there's no chart that says how bad this has to have been, and so if you're in this ethnic group, then and then this ethnic group, and this ethnic group. None of that. There's nothing in Scripture when it talks about duties of husbands to wives, our duties toward God, our duties toward government and authority. Nowhere, anywhere does race come in. It's not a biblical construct. It's not a biblical construct. The ethnic Gnostic is in grave theological danger if they claim to be a Christian. Now, there are a lot of ethnic Gnostics that are not Christians, obviously. But when they claim to be a Christian, here's the danger. And I saw this over and over and over again. Twitter, Facebook, blog posts. The great danger is when your ethnicity, your race, your culturalism becomes the first primary lens through which you view everything else. And some people would say, there's no way to escape that. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. The first primary lens must be the scriptures, the gospel, your relationship to God, who you are as his creature. That must be the first lens. You must look at everything else, including race, secondarily, only through the gospel. If you don't do that, you're not doing it as a Christian. And if you have your culturalism, your racism as your primary lens, looking at everything else, you will end up perverting the truth. And so let's just be absolutely positively honest here. For a certain portion of you, I should not have written that, because I'm MC, melanin challenged. I'm primarily Scottish, British, and German. That's an interesting mixture. Could cause all sorts of internal conflicts if I lived in light of what happened to my ancestors, but I don't. I don't know how they did it. And this is relevant, by the way. But my parents somehow instilled in me long time ago, you stand before God on your own two feet. I don't blame my parents. No one's ever had perfect parents. Nobody. Jesus didn't even have perfect parents, for crying out loud. Despite what the Roman Catholics say about Mary. They haven't made Joseph sinless. So, anyway, no one's ever had perfect parents. I didn't have perfect parents. I was not a perfect parent to my children. But I was taught somehow very early on, and I believe it with all my heart, that I stand before God responsible for my own decisions. I don't blame my parents. And you know what? I can look back at each one of my racial groups. Man, the Scots were treated like garbage. They were enslaved. I'm not going to demand reparations. I don't think it has something to do with me today. Why does anyone think that? I don't understand it. It seems absolutely, abjectly absurd to me. To go, hey, well, you know, this happened 150 years ago, so I can live this way, or you owe me that. It's not a way to live life, and it's not biblical. There's nothing in the Bible that tells you, well, you know, you should look back at what happened and live in light of that. You know what it does say to the Jewish people? Look back at God's faithfulness and live faithfully to his covenant. That's all it says. Nothing about race, nothing about living as a lifelong victim. In fact, if we're new creatures in Christ, how could that be anyways? Does that make any sense? Anyway, so the ethnic Gnostics, I just should never have even talked about this. I doubt if that young man had been a different race, I wonder how different this would have been. I really do. Some of you are saying, yeah, well, if you'd been white, you wouldn't have said anything. Oh, yes, I would have. I would have said the exact same things. I just would have used different numbers. That's all. I would have been just as offended. It had nothing to do with that. People completely missed that. Mainly because a lot of people think today with their emotions rather than their minds. Well, I didn't like how it made me feel. Well, okay. So let's get something straight. There are times when we have to make a decision as to whether we're going to honor the gospel or bow to our culture. And this is one of those situations. Now, I have no interest. I have this much interest. I've got a bunch of people on Twitter, even now, inviting themselves onto the dividing line. We need to have them on. They're experts. I have no interest. None. I wasn't trying to get into any kind of World War III. That's not what I've been called to do. We're trying to get to South Africa. We're trying to get to London. We're trying to do stuff with Islam. I need to get back to doing that stuff. I haven't done any of that stuff over this weekend. I have no interest in the never-ending diatribes of the ethnic Gnostics. No interest. Sorry, you're going to have to find somebody else. But I've learned some other things. But wait a minute, before I go there. But make sure that this is clearly understood. There is grave danger when you place as your primary interpretive grid something other than that which is provided by the Word of God and the Spirit of God, first and foremost. And I am so thankful for the men and women that I have met in all sorts of racial minorities, but especially black men and women that I have met, who go against the flow and live lives that are honoring to God, and who do not demand that, well, because of our racial background, we get to change things. No, they read the Word of God. The Word of God says, be subject to the ruling authorities. So they are. So they are. Do they get criticized for it? Do people talk down to them about it? Sure do. They don't care. They want to honor Christ first. And I want to honor you. I wasn't intending to get into this on Friday, but here it is. I have not had a single person present a single theological or biblical foundation for saying that what that young man did was excusable. It wasn't that bad. Because you can't. And you know you can't. And you know in your heart of hearts, if he continues down that road, he's probably not even going to have a long life, is he? Not unless God brings repentance to him. Who really loves him? The one that will tell him the truth or the one that excuses it? That's a question, isn't it? Yeah. One of these critics, again, tweeting right now, I've already refuted much of what he said. He accused me of trying to hide what I had said and stuff like that. I took the post down because at first I thought, man, people just must be completely misunderstanding this. That was probably the only mistake I made, really, and it was a tactical one. Because an internet troll, a vile, vicious, noxious internet troll that we've talked about before, reposted it and edited it. He inserted deeply hurtful, vile, disgusting, filthy things into it. He enjoys doing that. This is what he is. That's where his mind is. He is a troubler of the brethren. Anyone who retweets him should be ashamed of ever repeating anything that this man says. He is filth in the Christian community. There's I don't know anyone who's worse than this individual. Atheist, it doesn't matter. All religious groups put together, he puts them all to shame. That's how bad this individual is. We'll be talking about some of the people who treat him. But that gave him the opportunity of putting that out there. That was a tactical mistake on my part. But before I even had any exchange with this individual, who is Kevin M. Oliver, looks like from Atlanta. Here's a tweet from Mr. Oliver. And it says, here is a tweet from Mr. Oliver. There we go. Yeah. Screen captures confirm what he said. James White is a duplicitous, smug SOB. This is an example of why I never liked him since 07. So that's how things started. This is the kind of language that was being directed my way. So here you have someone who basically admits that for 9 years, he has disliked me. And by the way, this man claims to be a minister. So as a minister, he is willing to call people duplicitous, smug SOBs in social media. So yesterday, starting Saturday, for a while, well, I took down my Twitter feed for a while because it was just every time you'd open it up, 60, 70, mainly people I didn't even know. And I did not want to be sitting and going blog, 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 blog. So I just took it down for a while. Well, I must have forgot to bring that one up. But we started having a talk yesterday. That's not that one. And no, not that one either. Well, we got toward the end of the conversation, and I was pushing him to document what he was saying. He said that I denied what I had said. I had never denied what I said. I've now read everything I said and will defend it. He was ignorant of the internet troll stuff, and so he'd accused me of lying. And what I was saying was that someone was quoting an edited version, which was the other one that the other guy had put up. He was ignorant of that, so I'm the liar. I mean, this man's prejudiced beyond all belief as far as me personally. So I try reasoning with him on Twitter yesterday. I try talking with him on Twitter. And he said, well, you misinform people. Where did I misinform them? Well, I talked about it on this podcast or whatever. Excuse me. You're accusing me of being a racist. You're accusing me of these things. You're accusing me of misinforming people. Where did I do it? And I kept pushing, and he couldn't answer. He couldn't give a meaningful response. And so I finally said, so you're just admitting that while you're calling me a liar, you will not back up what you're saying. And his response was, look, we're not back. You're not the plantation owner, Jim. He knew that I had already taken offense to his familiarity. Plantation owner. Now, isn't that a racist thing to say? Isn't that inserting racism rather blatantly? I mean, if I said anything like that, oh my goodness. But he did. And other people started saying, whoa, dude, you just played the race card. Says, you do realize that talking about playing the race card is actually playing the race card. There's no winning. The circularity is amazing. And so here's one that came later. It says, so Dr. Oakley, 1689, can spew supremacist in a lengthy diatribe. So I guess that's what I put up. I guess that was supremacy. Facebook is supremacy. What I wrote, that's supremacy. We all know that's obviously ridiculous. But I say plantation, everyone loses their mind. Boy, bye. So at least there's the plantation language, and he admits he used it. But now I'm a white supremacist for that 545-word article that I wrote. No rational person believes that. But when I pushed him on this, I didn't get rational response back. He can't respond to it. So the last one here, he's got some, and I'll even tell you what it is. He's got some webcast. Like I said when we first began, you will be featured on pimppreacher.com. Yeah, that sounds great. You have not an ounce of integrity. So the guy who started off with this one, James Wise, duplicitous smug SOB, says, I'm the one that doesn't have an ounce of integrity. This was the nature of much of what was going on in social media over the past weekend. It was just, it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, leaving the social, the racial Gnostics aside for a moment, I need to talk about a couple other things before we wrap up today. As I mentioned, there is a vicious man. And you say, man, you call him a troll and he's noxious and vile. All you got to do is take the time to go read. Go look at what he does. There is no moral floor for this man. There is no attack so personal. There is nothing that he will not spew. And he, of course, jumped onto this immediately. Not that he has. And this is one of the things about these anonymous people. No one can hold him accountable. Nobody knows. He doesn't ever think. All he does is tear it down. He doesn't do anything positive. So no one can go and listen to sermons and stuff like that and you know, see a lifelong consistency or anything. There's no pictures of him speaking in black churches in Tembezi, South Africa, as there are of me. So he can just attack anybody he wants. There's no accountability. So he puts this thing out there and people start quoting it. People in the Reformed Pub on Facebook start posting it. People started posting it on Twitter. And of course he edited it and he inserted vile stuff into it. And evidently people didn't bother to read it to be able to know. I saw it first, I think, on Saturday night, I think it was on Saturday night on my phone. And I expect that this man will do anything. There is not an ounce of reason to be surprised at anything that he would do at all. He is the definition of internet stalker. But it was very troubling when I then saw Thabiti Anyabwili retweeting his article and saying good points. That was sad. And I'm very thankful that Tom Buck wrote to him and said, you do realize he's a King James Version only cultist. He's an attack dog. He's about as reliable. Well, he's just the most unreliable person you could ever, ever, ever quote. He is a slander, libel-producing machine. And as some of you saw, Thabiti was like, whoa, sorry, didn't know, didn't realize. Apologies. Did not mean to do that. I can tell Thabiti doesn't like what I said in the article, but he apologized. immediately for having retweeted that. And I'm very thankful for that. Russell Moore, one of the leading figures in the Southern Baptist Convention, responded to Thabiti's tweet. And I didn't understand what he said. It was so short that I couldn't tell what he was saying. I mean, it's sort of fairly obvious what he was saying, but I like to... believe me, this weekend has weakened my commitment to try to think the best of people first. It really has. There's no two ways about it. No two ways about it. But I wrote to Dr. Moore. Now, I do not have the secret bat email for Dr. Moore. So I just had to use the regular contact stuff. And it is quite possible that Dr. Moore never got my email. There were a number of other people on Twitter who challenged him on it and said, why are you quoting this individual and stuff like that. But I've not heard anything back. I wrote an email. I identified myself, asked to, talk with Dr. Moore about what he meant by his tweet, but I've gotten no response. I'd like to be able to tell you that Dr. Moore did what Thabiti did, but so far there's been no response. I don't know what that means. It could mean he doesn't like me. It could mean that he's on a book tour right now and hasn't had time to, I don't know. So there were those people who, out of ignorance, like I said, quite some time ago, we've all hit the retweet button, maybe without looking at what the sources were. It's the nature of social media today, to be perfectly honest with you. Doesn't make the retweeting of vile personal attacks any less painful, but it does, explain some of it. And then there were others. I learned a lot about who my friends and my enemies are. I want to thank all of you who have written in. I want to thank all of you who have sent messages. My daughter was telling me just a while ago how many people had wanted her to communicate to me. The people were praying for me and stuff like that, and they just couldn't believe what was going on and all that kind of stuff. I'm very, very thankful for all of those things. And I do believe that the vast majority of people fully know what I intended, agree with what I said, even if they don't agree with the way I said it, and are shocked at the ridiculous nature of the attacks that have been launched against me. But then there were others. They were the bandwagoners, the people who jumped on the bandwagon, the dog pilers. Wanted to get in on the fun. Who probably have been nursing roots of bitterness for a while. And seemed like a good time to go after James White. Hey, this is a hot button issue, man. I mean, almost nobody actually thinks about this one. It's just all emotions. So this is a good shot. And shortly after this all broke, the president of American Vision, Joel McDermott, posted on Facebook and basically said that I was a racist. Well, that my article was racist. Eventually, it's sort of like, well, you can say things and not necessarily be things. And I saw it come up in my feed, and I very quickly said to him, do you just sit around waiting to stab me in the back, or is it something that you practice? He deleted that. Because I immediately blocked him. Joel McDermott has been an opponent of mine since 2009. He normally does the backstabbing routine. You don't even see it coming. The only time I've ever even responded to him is when it would be some kind of a educational moment. There was some interaction about the theonomy stuff and the theonomy debate. Maybe he's still angry that I judged the debate the way that I did. But I even talked with the man just last year. Stood and spoke with him. And yet he still just has to toss stuff my direction every little bit. He just can't keep from doing it. Just a matter of weeks ago, he posted something about a Baptist who is supposedly preaching on the law of God. Well, everybody knows what Baptist that is. And then he said, but never makes any application to society or government. And I'm just like, what on earth are you listening to? And he wrote to me, well, if you'd like to show me where you'd, I don't want to misrepresent you. Oh, I'm supposed to go back through my sermons to provide you with time frames, time indexes, when you allegedly were already listening to them? Didn't even respond. And then this. Well, lots of people on Facebook jumped all over him. Rightfully so, just so absurd. But he held firm. And yesterday, I read through the whole long PDF of the comments that flowed from that initial pile-on. Oh, yeah, that was right. If he can't see how that was a racist article, blah, 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 blah. And I came to what we're going to put on the screen here. 2D. And by the way, what I was doing is, as I was reading through this stuff, I found a lot of folks that I thought were friends. I thought they were supporters. And I just put the name in Facebook and go, block, Facebook, block, Facebook, block. But here's 2D. And here's his comment. God, I thank thee that I am not as the sinners are, or even like this young man. He litters, disrespects authority, and even sags his pants. I, on the other hand, wear my belt 7 days a week. Give those in authority the warmest of greetings, and take great care to always throw my trash in the appropriate bin. How Pharisees pray, see Luke 18:11-14. Notice the two immediate people. Joel McDermott, perhaps the most brilliant post yet. And Bojidar Marinov, the most brilliant post yet, I agree. Now, as I pointed out in a comment, not on that thread, but when I was posting the announcement about this program, anybody else find this amazingly ironic? I mean, do you really think, Joel, that you should be throwing around charges of racism, given some of the company you keep, and how often you've had to defend them against charges of racism? You think that brick in the glass house is a really good idea? You're a hypocrite, sir. Massively so. There's more hypocrisy here. Major hypocrisy. You call yourself a theonomist and you think that's cool? You call yourself a theonomist? What kind of theonomic land, sir, would encourage the behavior that I was talking about? Wasn't that young man violating God's law in numerous ways to his own destruction? And for 2D, whoever 2D is, I know some people who know 2D, actually. I don't. You missed the point of Luke 18 badly. Luke 18 was not a diatribe against the Pharisees. keeping the law. Even when Jesus talked about their tithing of the mint and the rue and the cumin and so on and so forth, he says you should have done those things. But you missed the weightier matters of the law. And the contrast in Luke 18 was a repentant heart. The Pharisee didn't have a repentant heart. The publican did. This young man was not repentant. He was reveling in his rebellion. He thought this was a good thing. So this is a corruption of Scripture. It is a perversion of the intention of Scripture. It is creating a false parallel that is absurd on its face to anyone with the slightest honesty in exegesis. And Joel McDermott, the president of American Vision, goes, "Yay! Woo!" I've tried since 2009. I've tried since 2009 to find some way of going, well, you know, I have come to a conclusion. This man is my opponent. No more offering of my back. I'm marking you off. This is what you're going to do. Okay, I'm always going to keep you in front. I'm not trained in all that hand-to-hand stuff. That's Bodhi, man. Pan-American champion in jiu-jitsu. That's my son. Teaches Krav Maga, okay? But one thing I know, you don't give your back to your opponent. I won't be doing that. And I'm not looking forward to, you know, we run into each other. How you doing, Joel? Repented of that stuff yet? That's all I can do. But these were the pilers on. These were the people who go, ooh, this looks like an opportunity. I'm going to jump in. And I'm like, where's the integrity there? Where's the integrity? Don't know. Can't identify any. Some people are saying, hey, don't get discouraged, man. Don't get discouraged. Got a lot of stuff coming up, and I'm going to remain focused on it. And I thank all of you for the positive stuff. Thank you. But I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a human being. No human being enjoys being lied about, vilified, having the entire of their life trampled on based upon some twisting of a 545-word article for violating some kind of unwritten cultural standard that shouldn't even exist in the church. Is that enjoyable? No, it's not. Is it hurtful? Yeah, it is. It is. It is. So, there you go. One of the things that I forgot to mention is this Kevin Oliver guy who I'm just about to block. I've got enough of him. I asked him in our conversation, I said, what have you listened to what Vodi Balcom says about fatherlessness and abortion in the black community? I don't need to listen to Vodi Balcom. I'm an expert in these things. I know I'm well informed, blah, blah. I said, I thought what I was asking. I don't need to listen to Vodi Balcom. Oh, well, I was just wondering why Vodi Balcom can say these things and I can't. And when I do, I get called names. And his response was, I call Vodi Balcom the same names I call you. Thank you. That was honest. That was straightforward. I get it. Pray for the godly leaders in the black community that stand up and say, stop using race as an excuse for sin. Pray for them because it's not easy for them. It's not easy for them. What we're going to do in the future, when people rise, I heard someone say such and so. Here's the link. You know, I forget when it was. Something happened a number of months, maybe last year. And I made a mistake on this program. I told something about me personally. I told about why it is that this racial thing is just so ridiculous to me. I told the story about my youth and about how I was introduced to race. And that my first best friend, his dad was black as night, big black cop. I mean, I was little kid, so he looked like a mountain to me. And his mom, my goodness, was almost albino. I mean, she was so white, just northern Scandinavian, you know, hide from the sun white. And I'd go over to his house and play. And he was just my friend. And so years later, when I hear someone saying that the races shouldn't mix or something, I'm just sort of like, huh? What? Don't get it. I understand. I was mocked for that. I was mocked for that. The ethnic Gnostics, oh, they just mocked me for that. They can't believe that someone could have that as their background and hence not have as the primary lens through which everything else is seen. Racialism. I guess we just don't exist. Well, we do. There is not a gospel for one race and a different gospel for another. There's one gospel. There is one set of standards. There is one church. There is one spirit. There is one standard of sanctification. I am not saying that each one of us is called to be a clone of the other. What I am saying is that if you think that what I wrote was racist, the only reason I can find for it is that you have a racial lens through which you're looking at everything else. And it's perverting what you're seeing. That's dangerous. And that's improper. Thank you for listening today. Lord willing, on the next program, get to go back to talking about apologetics and things like that. Things that we're preparing for upcoming trips, so on and so forth. But I appreciate your patience in listening today as we've addressed this issue. God bless.